Muchachos, acompáñenme re mayor el venadito, ¿no?
Sí, Paco, ¿cómo
no, hombre?
Mexican Curio, no me vas a decir que no sabías que también somos humanos y nos llaman hermano mexicano. Más de una sorpresa, calmado.
Lo ves muy tranquila esta pinche fiesta.
La fiesta es nuevecita y no pienso usarla. Haz que bendecirla por la sangre mexicana. Tirada en la calle de los cueros.
¡En el río!
Frente a la mirada de mi gente y de mis hijos. Y si crees que es sencillo deshacerte de mí, no soy paciente y no respondo yo por mis reacciones. Si te pones agresivo en la frente, solo tiro pa.
Si te pones muy agresivo.
Si recuerdas, yo desciendo y tengo sangre pancho vía. Y a caballo o en la troca tengo mi puntería.
Whether or not Jim Gilchrist knows it, whether or not the organizers of the Minuteman Project know it, the fact is there are a great number of neo-Nazis and other white supremacists down there operating under the aegis of the Minuteman Project, and they are people who are specifically talking about the sport of shooting Mexicans and that sort of thing. You know, certainly that has not happened yet. No one has been killed or even shot, as far as I know, but I think the danger is extremely high.
And anything that we do as an organization, in terms of marches, in terms of demonstrations, they call us un-American. Why? Because we're people of color. And so we are the ones that are with Mexico. We're the ones with the terrorists and what have you. And basically what we try to promote is respect for humanity, respect for dignity and human rights and civil rights of individuals.
Tonight on Circle A Radio, we talk to Ernesto Aguilar from the Houston Anarchist People of Color, Jose Martiz from Derechos Humanos, and Mark Potek from the Southern Poverty Law Center about the United States government's increasing militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border and the Minutemen Project. Stay tuned. Ernesto Aguilar from Houston Anarchist People of Color and Pacifica radio affiliate KPFT.
Ernesto, what is your definition of the word Aztlan?
Well, the history of it goes back somewhat anthropologically and somewhat ideologically and politically. From an anthropological standpoint, it was what many anthropologists and historians have deemed the area by which the Aztecs traveled in order to get through Mexico before settling on the area that they'd settled on. The Aztecs themselves were actually very nomadic for quite a long time, and at some point there had been a decision to find settlements, try to break out of the nomadic tribe system to some extent, and Aztlan was theorized and is understood and thought by many historians to be the area by which the Aztecs had traveled. During that period, they became affiliated and became in touch with the Toltecs and the Mayans and many others, and took bits of those cultures as well in order to build the cities by which they would become most well known. The many majestic areas of the Aztec cities were theorized to have been taken and inspired by what the Toltecs had done, for example. So in that respect, the concept of Aztlan has some anthropological roots. From a historical and a political and ideological standpoint, the topic of Aztlan was really raised by the Chicano Liberation Movement of the 1960s as a spiritual and ideological sense of pride and of knowledge of oneself, the idea being that during the War of 1846, the United States and Mexico were, of course, clashing at the time over the ownership of land, specifically what's really now known as the southwestern United States. Mexico ended up losing that war, and as part of the agreement, the United States took basically what is now Texas, California, Nevada, Arizona, and a few other states, Colorado and New Mexico, and carved out basically half of Mexico's land, and it became American property. During that period of time, there was a great period of dissension, as you can expect, guerrilla warfare involving Mexicans who were still on the land, who still felt they had title to the land, and Americans who felt like, well, this was now American land, and therefore they could take it. As a result of these clashes, groups like the Texas Rangers and other vigilante groups came to protect large stretches of land that ranchers had taken over and that other settlers had decided they were going to take as a consequence of the colonization and the seizure of Mexican land by the United States. That tendency became something that would find a lot of sympathy and a lot of grounding in the liberation movements of the 1960s. Folks like Reyes Lopez Tijerina brought up the issue of land grants, where many Mexican families held titles to the land that was of those particular states for many, many generations. And once the war had happened, there was basically a wiping out of those land holdings, and those families lost claim to that. So movements like what Reyes led were to say that this was, in fact, ancestrally Mexican land, and therefore Mexicans had a claim to it. Going back in a bit of a different direction, more of an ideological way, there were folks like Corky Gonzalez, Cesar Chavez, to a lesser extent, who said that Mexicans had a right to Aztlán, had a right to the spiritual underpinnings, the ideological, political, and psychological underpinnings that reminded Mexican people that the land that the United States held was theirs, and they as people were not simply the laborers and the people who were to be looked down upon, but were actually those who had taken a stand and had been those who were really the first peoples of the land, were the indigenous peoples, and were those who had something to be proud of. So it became from something that was simply anthropological to something that was really a basis of pride and was really something that became of real value to the people that were involved in many of these movements over the years.
The Minuteman Project has recently emerged in a big public way, the group based in Arizona, which has been called vigilantes by the Bush administration as well as by Vicente Fox, president of Mexico. What is your opinion of the Minuteman Project and groups like them?
It is very intriguing because there are various political movements that have very significant critiques of these types of things, organizing against border incursions and things like that. I had an interview at one point with a gentleman named Jay Sakai, who wrote a book called Settlers, and in the work he's done over the years, he's worked in plants and he's worked in all kinds of things. And one of the things he pointed out to me is that it's very interesting when you talk to Mexicans about their concept of what the border is. Many of them enjoy the United States, like all the things about it, but many of them don't necessarily want to stay in the United States to come here for work. Mexico is where they came from. It's something that they are very proud of, and it's some place they want to go back to. They come here for work. So to them, the border is a political issue, but doesn't become something that they observe as something that's going to be important to their lives beyond trying to create livelihood. For many of the Minutemen and those who seem to come from that type of perspective, this is an issue of territory and it's an issue of economic rights and economic determination of who has ultimate hold over those properties, who has ultimate hold over the political capital that those lands have become. So for these individuals, they're fighting in what many respects will be ultimately a losing war. I say that it's a losing war in that while we can certainly say that we can continue to fortify the borders with more human power, more soldiers, more fences, more helicopters, more funding, and even the strictest security expert will say you're not going to be able to stop everyone. But from a political standpoint, those in power understand that rather than continue this process, it's best to regulate it. Therefore, you'll have policies like this introduction of temporary worker visas and things of that nature. Those who are in power understand that these things need to be addressed in a different way because constant law enforcement is not working. So these individuals who have decided to camp themselves out and march around with rifles and do all these other things will ultimately not be able to win. They're defending what is more a cultural belief than one that will be an economic means of operation henceforth, primarily because they appeal on a very base level to those who feel that they're losing their way of life. The country is becoming browner, therefore the cultures and the mores and the norms that they grew up with or became used to will start to disintegrate ultimately. There's a book called Brown Tide Rising that was released about a year, 2 years ago that talks about media perceptions and human perceptions of immigration. And you'll see that within major mainstream media, the way that immigration is treated is that there is, to coin the term of the author, a brown tide rising over the United States. There are masses who are flooding the country and who are therefore people who should be feared. But from a reality type of standpoint, you don't have people in the United States who are willing to work the jobs that immigrants are working. You have people who, despite their language, need those people to do those jobs and don't want to pay Americans to pay those kinds of wages, or don't want to pay Americans lower wages, so therefore they'll go ahead and pay the undocumented immigrant, but can't really say that publicly because it just doesn't carry a lot of political currency, and so they'll start to adjust the laws to adapt to that. However, you have people like the Minutemen and other folks who want the lockdown borders who haven't grasped that political reality and can't grasp that political reality because it really chips at the real foundation of what they perceive America to be. Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico. Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico.
Mark Potok of the Montgomery, Alabama chapter of the Southern Poverty Law Center.
I am the director of the Intelligence Project of the Southern Poverty Law Center. That is essentially our hate group monitoring operation, our kind of investigative arm. The Southern Poverty Law Center, basically it's a civil rights law firm, a nonprofit law firm that monitors hate groups, follows the radical right in general. We also produce a lot of teaching tolerance materials for schools around the country, and we bring a lot of civil rights law cases, legal cases as well.
Would you describe the Minuteman Project in Southern Arizona as a hate group?
Well, we do not list the Minuteman Project as a hate group because we have not proven that the group is largely or wholly animated by racism. Certainly its leader, Jim Gilchrist, has made a big deal out of the idea that, they won't allow any racists in there, by golly, and so on. Gilchrist has said that he is doing background checks on the people down there and so on. That, in fact, if not precisely false, does not describe what's going on down there. First of all, Gilchrist claimed that the FBI was doing background checks on the people who were coming down there to make sure that no white supremacists and Klansmen and so on came down. Of course, the FBI was doing no such thing and came out and said, we're not doing background checks for any private group. The other thing I think that's important to know about the Minuteman Project in Arizona is that, in fact, there are neo-Nazis down there participating. I know that for a fact. It may be true that Jim Gilchrist does not know, has not figured this out, but there are numerous members of very serious hate groups down there, out of uniform, out of their robes, who are patrolling the border with guns, who are running around there with long rifles, despite promises made by the Minuteman Project earlier that there wouldn't be any long rifle weapons. They're down there. So, I mean, what I think about it is I think it's an extremely volatile situation. I think it could go south very easily at almost any moment. You know, what you've basically got down there is a bunch of people who feel that they're on some kind of vacation hunting Mexicans, and in a very large number of cases carrying weapons, very serious weapons. You know, the whole area of southeast Arizona is extremely tense anywhere. There have been vigilante groups operating down there for about 3 years now. This is only the latest to pop up. And so I think it's just a terrible situation. I think that across the board, law enforcement in Arizona would very much like to see these people go away because they see the same thing that I do, which is a real danger of something serious happening.
Mark, earlier you made a comment in which you said the activities of the Minuteman Project in southern Arizona was resembling open hunting season against Mexicans. Can you please elaborate on that a little bit further?
There's a lot to that. And, you know, earlier groups that have gone down there have explicitly spoken about, you know, hunting humans as the ultimate sport and that kind of thing. So, you know, although the people involved in this project are very quick to say, you know, they're just trying to do a great thing for America and kind of, you know, help our democracy thrive, you know, the reality is this whole thing has an extremely nasty edge. I don't think there's any doubt that many bigots and racists are involved. And in any event, this is not the job of civilians to go marching up and down and holding people at gunpoint. You know, I know, for instance, that in the last couple of years, people have been pulled over on public highways at gunpoint. Typically, it'll be a van going by with people inside who look Hispanic, at least to the person holding the gun. You know, we have a word for that in America. It's called kidnapping, felony kidnapping. And yet, you know, that kind of thing seems to go on down there quite a lot. There really does not seem to have been much of a crackdown at all on the part of law enforcement officials. And where most of this action is happening, in Cochise County, Arizona, law enforcement seems to be doing virtually nothing.
Is the Minuteman Project even legal?
Well, I suppose if they stay within the parameters they've said they were going to stay in, yeah, I think it is legal. You know, I think if they simply are standing back a half a mile from the border and watching people cross with binoculars or taking films and so on, I don't think there's much question at all that it is legal. But, of course, when you get into detaining people at gunpoint, you are immediately in a very dodgy area and one in which you can get into quite a lot of trouble very quickly.
Jose Martiz from the Tucson, Arizona-based Coalition for Human Rights, Derechos Humanos.
The war on the poor and the immigrants and undocumented has been going. It's an ongoing war. Like one of the Border Patrol said, it's a low-intensity war. And it's been going on now for the last 10, 15 years, actually. And it has escalated to the point where now there's organized civilian groups that are trying to do the job of the Border Patrol. I'm speaking about the Minuteman. I'm speaking about the Ranch Rescue individuals, the American Patrol. I'm talking about individuals that have taken a stand against the immigrants and people coming from Mexico. And all that has come about and created by our failed immigration policies that we have in our border communities.
What's going on right now with the coalition to defeat Proposition 200?
That's other problem that we're having here in Arizona is that we have individuals from the community as well as politicians, as you know, that have been promoting anti-immigrant legislation. And the latest one was Proposition 200, or what they call the Protect Arizona Now. They've made allegations against the undocumented people in this community that they have been involved in voting, and they want to put a stop to that. So they created this Proposition 200 bill. The other thing was that their concern was that a lot of undocumented or illegal people, immigrants, have been taking advantage of our social services. And so they decided that they wanted to establish a bill to make sure that only citizens can vote, number one. And number two, that services are only rendered to U.S. citizens and not non-citizens. So we as a community, the Derechos Humanos Coalition to Defeat Proposition 200, Pima County Interfaith Council, and other organizations that were instrumental in fighting Proposition 200 here in Pima County in Arizona. But now the proponents for it are now trying to add other things to the bill, where they want anywhere from public services to hospital services to be included in the bill. And that's one of the things that we're fighting against right now, is that type of mentality and trying to make changes or at least stop at some point this wildfire that got started back in November. Right now, as we speak, there's about 17 other bills, anti-immigrant bills, that have been introduced in the state legislature, anywhere from education to jobs to, I should say employment, basic needs that all of us need to survive against immigrants here in this community, or in Arizona, I should say. We're meeting, we're strategizing, we're trying to educate our community, those that are have become recent citizens, to get involved in civic political situations so they can voice their opinion and concerns. And we have been dealing with elected officials to try and change some minds here and talk about the plight of the undocumented person. Also, the contributions that these undocumented people have contributed to every community they're at.
There seems to not be a lot of reflection on the big picture. There's a lot of fighting between poor Americans who feel that poor Mexicans are taking away the diminishing service and the diminishing standard of living that's going on in this country due to federal budget cuts and lack of things like health care and decent wages and that sort of thing. And there doesn't seem to be the looking up at who the real enemy is.
We've always maintained that the situation in the border areas or immigration is not so much a law enforcement issue, it's an economic issue here. Not only are we looking at how the government has implemented NAFTA and other economic policies that have affected other countries, especially in 1993 when they implemented NAFTA, that put a lot of Mexican workers out of work. The mom and pop businesses had to shut down. They could not compete with corporations. And that created an influx of migration from the deep south of Mexico into the northern part of Mexico, especially the border areas, Tijuana, Nogales, Douglas, El Paso, Brownsville, because of NAFTA. And that's one of the things that people need to realize. But the United States and even the Mexican government simply just say that that NAFTA has been very helpful to them and that people just want to work. And to some extent, that could be true. In the other sense, there's a lot more poor people that has affected those are the poor people that are coming through. The other interesting thing that has happened is that in the last 5 years, you're looking at a migration of a great number of indigenous people coming in from the deep south of Mexico, from the Chiapas area, from Guerrero, from Sonora. And that's one of the things that has not been seen in many, many years. But now you see a lot of poor farmers that have been displaced by NAFTA because Mexico is buying a lot of corn, a lot of their farm products. And the poor farmers in the rural areas of Mexico cannot compete against the farmers here in America. And so talking about economics, yes, that's how it has hurt the poorest people. The law enforcement issue, well, you know, an individual becomes a criminal only when they are deported by the court. If you are caught as crossing the border right now, it's only a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor like jaywalking, and all of us are jaywalkers. We're all lawbreakers. The attitude that a lot of the undocumented border crossers are criminals, no. The majority of them are not criminals. But nevertheless, the United States has created a criminal element, or I should say criminal category now for the undocumented person. They're here in Tucson. They built a big, big federal court here to process undocumented individuals, and their only crime was crossing the border. As we say, that court and people that were hired to work at that court have been created by this influx of migration from Mexico, from South America, from Guatemala, and Central America, and South America, and Mexico, that has created a economic situation for the court system here, even a lot of jobs to attorneys and judges, and simply because they cross the border.
Could you talk a little bit about the kinds of conditions that people who are living in Mexico are leaving to come to the United States?
When a lot of companies that have developed, have come into a community to set up shop, have hired a lot of people from that community. And so people started coming from all over Mexico to either Tijuana or Nogales or Douglas to find work. And the work that they find may be a job paying less than, what, $3 an hour. And for Mexico, that's good. It's a good wage. Because normally you're looking at least a minimum about $1 an hour job. It's a normal wage, but the maquiladoras have been able to up that. On top of that, they do provide some type of housing, but then again, they had to pay. There's a fee for living in a company house. It's kind of going back to the way the mine companies, copper mine companies here in Arizona used to do. They would establish a community and rent housing for workers. And basically that's a approach that some of the maquiladoras are doing, you know. All the services are rendered by the company. And to some, that's something new and it's something that they think it's good for them. But then again, it's out of their own salaries they have to pay for those services. So what do you wind up with, especially if you have a family, I'd say it's a minimum of four people, you can't survive on that salary range, especially in the border areas because everything is sky high and it's very difficult economically to survive. So what happens is they do work for a while, they save their money, whatever money they can, and they try and come across to either Tucson, Phoenix, or the areas of the United States to work because they know that what they make in a month there, they can make it in a week here in the United States. That has been a situation. What it has created also is economic opportunity for the coyotes, the polleros, the smugglers, you know. That is not to say that the smugglers have never been there because they have. There's always been smugglers in the border areas, but now they're more organized and they're more sophisticated in their organizing, and they cost more now. In some cases, the coyotes, they are hired by, I'd say, companies as far as Oklahoma, Florida, Alaska, to recruit workers for them. I would imagine they have some kind of fee that they pay the coyotes, as well as they charge the individual who wants to go work in these companies. They make money from both sides, from the company themselves, as well as from individuals wanting to come work with those companies. On the other hand, there are coyotes that say, I can only get you across to Cracross, Nogales, Douglas, or Tijuana, wherever, and the rest other ways up to you. And it's going to cost you X number of dollars. So people, you know, sell their belongings, sell their animals, sell whatever they can, and save money on top of that to pay, be able to pay a coyote. In some cases, people pay half of the fee, and they say, when I get over there, I'll have my relatives that are in the United States to give you the rest. And sometimes what has happened in some cases that we have documented, that a coyote hold hostage this individual until the relatives that individual pay. So he's created that type of criminal activity here in this community. What used to be a $200 fee, now it's up to $2,000 to pass to come across, depending on your point of destination.
You're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO 90.7. Tonight we're talking about U.S. border policy and the Tucson-based Minuteman Project. We spoke with people on the streets in downtown Portland and asked them if they thought that the government's increased focus on border control made the country safer.
No.
I just do not answer.
I think it's kind of creepy, actually.
Not really.
No.
Not me either. Okay. And are you familiar with a group in Tucson called the Minutemen?
Mm-hmm. I've read about them.
What do you think about them?
I think it's terrible.
Would you like to say anything about that?
Well, I agree. I think it sounds like vigilantism of the worst kind. And it supports an approach to law keeping that I thought we gave up 100 years ago.
I'd say no, but that's my answer.
Are you familiar with the group in Tucson, Arizona called the Minutemen?
Are they the ones that are there, the private citizens that are patrolling the borders now?
Uh-huh. What do you think about them?
Well, I think they have good intentions, but I question that they have enough knowledge to not be violating people's rights and kind of taking things into their own hands. But I don't necessarily disagree with what they're doing, because I think that something needs to be done, and the government doesn't seem to be able to fund it enough to have enough people to do what they need to do.
It doesn't make me feel safer, but I'm sure there are people who think that's the answer.
And are you familiar with the group in Tucson called the Minutemen?
No.
And are you guys familiar with the Minutemen out of Tucson? The group called the Minutemen?
No.
Sounds familiar, but I don't really know.
And are you familiar with a group in Tucson called the Minutemen?
No.
And are you familiar with a group out of Tucson called the Minutemen? Yeah. What do you think about
that? There's a lot of problems down there, and someone's got to do something about it.
What do you think about the way they're going about it?
I really don't know that much about it.
I think there's actually a government focus on border control. We have the vigilantes down there. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's the country would grind to a halt without undocumented labor, particularly on the coasts.
Jose Martiz from the Tucson, Arizona-based Coalition for Human Rights, Derechos Humanos. Your website includes a migrant deaths page, which serves as a memorial and an educational tool. How many people die crossing the border, and what are some of the main causes of death?
Well, we have seen over 250 people die trying to cross the border of Arizona. Most of them come from the Tucson sector here in Tucson area through the Tohono-O'odham Indian Reservation, where there's a lot of people that have come through there and that have died trying to cross that treacherous desert. Again, you know, everything is based on the enforcement policies and strategies of Homeland Security now. Prior to that, it was United States Border Patrol and Customs that came out with the idea of setting up walls in different areas. Congressman Sylvester Reyes from Texas was a brainchild of Operation Hold the Line, and the brainchild also for building walls in San Diego, Operation Gatekeeper. And it came to Arizona, which is, we have what we call the Operation Safeguard. What has happened is that they were able to successfully stop the illegal border crossing in San Diego to some degree. Then the border crossers decided to go through El Paso. And that's where, at that time, Sylvester Reyes was chief of the Border Patrol there. And he implemented Operation Hold the Line. And he, I think it was a month that he had all his staff vehicles to line up around the Rio Grande there to make sure that people didn't cross. In a sense, stopped the flow of undocumented individuals. So they started moving into Arizona, little by little. They started in Douglas. From Douglas, they came to the Tucson area. The Tucson area, it came down to the Tohono Indian Nation. And that's where it's at right now. They're talking about putting on more and more border patrol at the border. They're talking about building more walls. It's still not going to stop the flow of undocumented migrants. They're going to go somewhere else, you know, and they're pushing them more and more into treacherous terrains, and people are going to die. It's unfortunate, but there is information that the Border Patrol and the planners of this particular strategy knew that people were going to die. And so they figure that once the people start seeing people dying, that it's going to deter them from coming in. It hasn't happened. Right now with the Minutemen, they're not coming through right now through Douglas. They're probably all coming in through the Tohono-O'odham Nation to evade being captured by this Minutemen guy. But yet they're saying that because of the Minutemen, there's been less arrest here at the border, and that the actions of the Minutemen have been very successful. And I said, well, it could be true, but then again, you're looking at a 200 and or to 300 miles of the border is not as secured as the Douglas Bisbee area, and I'm sure that there's a lot more people coming through the Tohono-O'odham Indian Reservation, and that's creating a lot of problems for the Indian Nation there. The media, that's what they've been reporting in the last week or so, that the activities of Minutemen have stopped the inflow of undocumented workers, the undocumented border crosser. We've been in this business for a long time, and we know that once they put a plug in one area, they go to another area. They bust loose in another area on the borderline. Unless the United States is talking about building a great Berlin Wall, 2,000-mile wall, and man that 24/7, not even then will they stop the undocumented individual coming through.
I'm noticing the language that's being used. Operation Safeguard, Homeland Security, Protect Arizona Now. Lots of fear-based legislation that's going on. A lot of fear-based propaganda against immigrants of any kind. At the federal level, there's been a push to make all immigrants appear to be a threat to national security. Can you talk a little bit about that?
everybody's concerned about national security and homeland security. Going back to when we started working with this issue in this community, it was an issue that we're concerned about was Border Patrol abuse. What has happened since then is that people have been pushing this xenophobic idea that immigrants are here to, first was the jobs, taking jobs. Then they started blaming the immigrants for the problem of social services, hospital services. Then they started blaming the immigrants for changing the culture of the United States. And so people were hearing all this, and they were pushing to stop the flow of migrants. And to us here, the closest one is Mexico, people coming in from Mexico. And then the 9/11 tragedy happened, and everybody got concerned about the terrorists coming in through the southern border, Tucson, if you will, because we have the largest air base here in this part of the country. And then we have Fort Huachuca, which is a large base also for the Army. And so people here started getting concerned about the potential attack on Tucson, Pima County, or Sierra Vista, Cochise County, because of the two federal bases that we have here. And so the idea of fighting terrorism, people have been very concerned, afraid of especially the Middle Eastern individuals, the Muslims, the Arabs, wherever. One of the things that has been created here also, on top of that, they've been concerned about all this drug traffic also. So they're trying to combine everything and anything that scares the people, puts fear in people. I am a member of the Pascuayac tribe, and people may think that, hey, you know, I'm with the other side. And anything that we do as an organization, in terms of marches, in terms of demonstrations, they call us un-American. Why? Because we're people of color. And so we are the ones that are with Mexico. We're the ones with terrorists and what have you. And basically what we try to promote is respect for humanity, respect for dignity and human rights and civil rights of individuals. People believe that we harbor the criminals, that we are in cahoots with those criminals coming through, and it's not that we don't support any criminal activities coming from the border area, but we do try to promote that all people should be treated with dignity and respect, especially the undocumented individual coming through. That's where the xenophobic and immigrant hysteria comes from, is from all that up to now where we're at today. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's been building since policies, since 1994 when Clinton was in office, that he implemented these gatekeepers. And then when Republicans came into office, they continued to push this agenda. So we have people against the immigrants. We've always maintained that the best way for people to help us is to join in the movement of putting pressure on our government to change the policies. And it's a very difficult thing to do, but I would say it's not impossible. I think that there's enough people around the country that supports the changes in immigration law, changes the way and attitudes of homeland security, and basically in the local area, changing the minds of those and attitudes of those community residents in your area, because I'm sure there's those that are for and those that are against, like in every community. But there's a majority of people that support the effort of public policy changes, and we need to make changes in our policies. For example, you're talking about visas, you're talking about work visas, you're talking about student visas. Let's say if the United States opens the visa process for workers, it will be easy for an individual to apply for a visa, or make it easy in terms of making it more accessible to them. And that's not to say to give those visas for free, but at the same time, not make it as difficult as it is now. Because right now, the way a work visa works, that if you as an employer have a job and you want to offer me, Jose Matus from Sonora, Mexico, this job, you have to make sure, you have to show the government that this job cannot be done by anyone here in the United States. And so that is the difficulty of trying to get a work visa. A lot of people don't understand that particular situation. A lot of people just say, well, why don't they come here legally? Yes, they can come here legally, but they're not. If they come here legally, they'll only get a visa, and that's a tourist visa. But the tourist visa does not give this individual an opportunity to work. Why? Because it's only for tourists. I think that if we start promoting a work visa, for me as a Mexican national, they want to work, is looking for work, giving me that opportunity to kind of work over here, pay taxes here, and go back to Mexico. And I think that's going to work a lot better than what we have now. That also is going to give me an opportunity to contribute to this country by paying taxes, because those people are required to pay taxes. Like, for example, a lot of people think that the Indians don't pay taxes, and we do. We do pay taxes. And so I think those are the things that we need to do, make a set up a national movement to start looking at immigration policies and the visa processing policies that need to be looked at. Also, we're implementing, we have always pushed for family unity and allowing those that have been here for years without documents to become legally here. I know people that have worked here for ages and they contributed to the community by in terms of taxes and buying power and all that. Some of them don't even claim their contributions they made to the government because they're not here legally. Well, definitely, and as well as employers, you know, there was a study made recently that the undocumented immigrant has contributed over $300 million to the IRS. But then you're looking at those other companies that don't report the monies because they know that some of the workers are undocumented. And that's one of the things that somebody should conduct a study on that. You know, how many other companies here do that? You know, there might be more than $300 million or $1 billion, probably being in the billions if somebody makes a good study on how many companies cheat the government and submitting the taxes taken away from these undocumented people. Well, Derechos Humanos is open to coming in into other communities. You know, we are invited to come and do a presentation, bring the word of what's going on in our communities. And they can call myself, Jose Matus, at 520-770-1373. Or if I'm out there, you can talk to our coordinator, Kat Rodriguez, at the same number. We also have a youth component that we have youth coming in from the various segments of the community to monitor the activities of the Border Patrol, the police, and document abuses. And we try to make sure that no one gets hurt or mistreated by law enforcement agencies. And basically to promote human rights and civil rights of individuals. So we're open to visit conferences, communities, to bring out the word of what we're doing here in Tucson, Arizona.
To learn more about the work of groups like Derechos Hermanos, the Border Action Network, and the Southern Poverty Law Center, check out their websites. Derechos Hermanos, DERECHOSHUMANOSAZ.net and borderaction.org and www.splc.org. www.circleacenter.org. You've been listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO. Tune in every first and third Wednesday at 6 p.m. Our next show will be May 4th. We would like to thank everyone who pledged during our show this past fundraising drive.
We love hearing from you. Contact us at info@circlearadio.org. If you'd like to listen to some of our past shows, go to the radio link at portland.indymedia.org and look for Circle A Radio. Thanks for listening.